like to see the sign that says no hammocks.
We've got a whole.
Where's the no hammock sign?
We got a whole list of things.
No, I can't see you. You can't see me.
If you don't come out of that.
I'm not here.
Call the police.
No.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I won't be stopped. I said I won't be stopped. You see that?
Oh my god.
Yeah. I'm like an anaconda.
I'm like an anaconda.
Oh
my god.
What
the?
You're
gonna give yourself a concussion.
You have
panic in
there. Just drive the bus. Dude, we got places to go.
I don't think we can. Can you get down so we can get where we're going? Please?
What?
Dude, please?
I'm staying in the hammock.
I'm not moving this bus.
You know what? There's AC in here.
Dude, get down.
I'm not getting down.
I got smacked.
Get down. Get down. We have to go.
So we wanted to take a break from the women driver videos because Don is not a fan.
We're like, we just want the viewership to go back up.
Kale, this is why God made the internet.
Oh man.
Yeah, so the title of the show tonight, I we're not gonna get into it yet. We're gonna do a couple things before that, but I listened to the Russell Brand interview on my way into work this morning, and you could see Brett Weinstein or Weinstein, whatever his name is trying to come up with a new form of atheism because the new atheists are doing so bad with their message, and he's trying to give this nuanced view that takes into account Christianity and like how it evolved and all this stuff. So we're going to get into that because I think Russell Brand handled that really well.
So I just realized I screwed up the local setup for tonight. It's not streaming to locals.
Can we set it up midstream? Or
I can set up a new one.
And maybe after we end here, we'll jump over to locals on a separate stream?
On a separate, yeah. Yep,
exactly. All right, so maybe don't set the time yet. And we'll because on locals tonight, I want to do the most annoying woman who ever existed, which I'm pretty sure most people have seen her by now, but it's that crazy woman who.
Common. First and foremost, until a few months ago,
there's a curse in it.
We were both employed by the Kansas City Chiefs.
It's the ex Kansas City Chiefs cheerleader. Mm. So we'll do that on locals and go through some of her TikToks because that woman is completely insane.
Nuts.
But I wanted to start with, first off, I'm going to be at Catholic Palooza July 27th. Their tickets are only $40, guys. Please go get a ticket. Use code AB27. We want to let these guys know that if anybody brings me or Rob onto their venue, our show can pull in some people. So use code AB27, Catholic Palooza. It's in New Jersey this year. So if you're in the tri-state area, go check that out. And then I want to get into the view. Let's play that. Let's play that view clip. So this is a clip of The View discussing the Harrison Butker situation, and it's pretty nuts how Whoopi Goldberg is actually defending the guy, and there's an evangelical Christian woman making claims, but it's wait till we play it, and I'll give my two cents once we play it.
Sometimes you send me the worst videos.
Screen record, dude.
I agree with you and I disagree with you.
That's
so
okay.
So I agree with that freedom, in the spirit of freedom of speech. I don't want people shut down or fired for things they're mm-hmm. willing to say. Yeah. I will break with you on the comparison to Colin Kaepernick for this reason. Colin Kaepernick was standing up for the rights of many and saying in a social justice moment, this is a reminder that we're not there yet. What this man is doing is not just a devout Catholic. This is someone who's practicing something called the traditional Latin
yes.
Mass,
yes.
which is divergent from the majority of Catholics. It's compared to being cult-like and extremist, like some religions in the Middle East and Asia. Yeah. So this is a very extreme religion. It bothers me about
that's insane. Wait. Pause it real quick. I gotta just wait.
Classic Biden voter.
What did she say at first? She said.
She said that this is part of what's called the traditional Latin Mass, which is a divergent from the mainstream, and it's cult-like and comparable to Middle Eastern, you know, cults.
Yeah. I'll play it again.
Wait. Should I send you a better version of it?
Or that we're not there yet.
You have it.
Yeah, I have a better version of it. Let me.
It's a better version where she doesn't say any of it. He's just like, this was so base. Yes, everyone, you guys are extremists. Congratulations. What's new?
James, the Texas trad on Instagram, said she can't even bring herself to say the word Islam.
We're extremists. Well,
that's what she said. Like the extremists, like in East Asia and Islam.
The
Middle East.
The religion of peace.
Oh, this is going to take forever to load.
It's okay. Give me time to set up the stream for.
Working on the fly here, guys.
Okay, so I'm not going to. Well, I have to schedule the stream, otherwise it won't work. So
maybe I should just do it like this. Wait, let me see. Sorry, guys. Bear with us for a second here. Let me see.
I'm just going to schedule it for 9 o'clock Eastern. Maybe we don't have to hit that.
Okay, now it's loading up. Yeah, the Harrison Butker thing is a cultural moment, man. Like the discourse on this is completely insane. And half the videos that you want to play, you can't because there's so much vulgarity in it that they're unplayable on YouTube. But there's just video after video of these women losing their mind. Like, it's actually what's going on. It's just women completely losing their minds over this. So, all right, I loaded the better clip.
Okay, let me see. Yep. Okay.
Things function so much better when Rob's in charge.
This is the same thing.
Oh, it is. No, it isn't. How can that be?
What do you mean? I think that literally is the same thing.
It's the same one. How did that happen?
Oh, bro. I think you all better, y'all, Anthony, all y'all have seen the clip, though. I mean, like, the View ladies, they go off. She goes off the wall and she compares it to a cult. And some of you guys who follow me on social media, you would have seen me. So, like, go to Nicholas Cavazos on Instagram. You can follow me for all my
try that one. Try spicy that one. Moments. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick. I sent a new one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, I mean, what I find so interesting about this is the wording she uses. She says, this is like, you know, he's part of what's called the traditional Latin mass, which is a divergent, you know, movement.
Except okay. That's what we have to really focus in on
And so like what I found fascinating about this, and I put this up online, is notice how within the last like 2 or 3 years, you've seen every major force start to hone in on traditionalism, whether that's the FBI, right? Whether it's them saying like the rosaries are extremists, or they're going to put Latin mass implants, you know, like spies and stuff into Latin mass parishes, etc. Or whether it be kind of Catholic Inc. saying, the trads, you know, shut up, you gotta be quiet. Or Traditionis Custodis, right? You gotta shut up and do your thing. Or The View, right? In this kind of more cultural context, it's all the same movement. What I think you're seeing right now is Satan's best attempt at destroying whatever possibly, you know, he can, and discredit whatever he wants to discredit right now.
You think so? Because to me, it seems like if that's his plan, it's massively backfiring, because all it's doing is giving Satan's publicity to
I don't think it's his best attempt. His best attempt.
Yeah. Because you're seeing the traditional mass, and you're seeing traditional, a shift towards traditional, even not even just traditional Catholicism, traditional Christianity, in a way that I mean, 10 years ago would have been unimaginable.
Yeah. You're seeing him resist as best he can, because the hand of the Lord is starting to pull back on the chain and say, all right, I've given you free rein for a while now, but it's starting to be pulled up. Man has ingested as much sin as they can, and now they're dying for something else. So I'm going to give them what has always satisfied them. And so therefore he is going to go out there and he's going to do whatever he can, but he discredits himself. I mean, Satan, he's cunning, but he's also an idiot, because he rebels against the Most High. And so therefore, you know, he's going to try whatever he can. And if his mouthpiece is, you know, an evangelical feminist, then oh, well.
Many times.
So I sent the better version of the video. Yeah, let's see. This one should be bigger.
This
there we go. Big, okay. Big whoopee face.
Yeah, James on Instagram says she's one step away from calling us Taliban Catholics.
But that's exactly what she's doing. Exactly. So.
that freedom, in the spirit of freedom of speech, I don't want people shut down or fired for things they're willing to say. Yeah. I will break with you on the comparison to Colin Kaepernick for this reason. Colin Kaepernick was standing up for the rights of many and
that's
saying
what
in
I
a
wanted
social
to say,
justice
right
moment.
There. So she starts off, is this woman supposed to be the conservative on the show?
Oh, that I have no clue.
White and blonde, so I would assume so.
Yeah, I would assume she's a conservative evangelical chick. And you see right away, well, Colin Kaepernick was standing up for something good, not like this evil Harrison Bucker who's standing up for women being homemakers. Just keep it up, Rob. We'll just keep hitting play because we're going to wind up pausing it a few times.
This is a reminder that we're not there yet. What this man is doing is not just a devout Catholic. This is someone who's practicing something called the traditional Latin Mass.
Yes.
Which is divergent from the majority of Catholics. It's compared to being cult-like and extremist like some religions in the Middle East and Asia. So this is a very extreme religion. And what bothers me about that as a Christian is that when people abuse Christianity, they often not only cherry pick from the Bible, they misinterpret and lie by omission.
The irony.
The evangelicals, the kings of cherry picking passages.
We honestly have to start pulling their own game against them and stop calling them Christian. They're not Christian.
They're just, it's just so crazy how she prefaces it with, as a Christian. I am
the authority on Christianity.
It's amazing. Now she gets to something that's so pivotal in this stuff that's really gives credence to what she's saying.
Can you imagine if we actually were Taliban Catholics? We could get rid of this show forever.
Yeah. They'd be afraid of us. They would be afraid of us if we were Taliban Catholics.
If only. Okay.
By taking out parts that would have explained something a little better. So what I can say to him as a Christian is if you're using this to oppress a people or hold them down, you're not walking with Jesus. If you are using the religion, if you are more obsessed with the religious rituals and practices than you are with the word of Jesus, you're not walking with Jesus. And if you're using it for the judgment of others.
She sounds like a typical anti-trad. You worship the liturgy. How dare you need to worship God?
You're a Pharisee that likes the
same parent arguments.
This is why this morning I tweeted I'm religious but not spiritual because I watched this clip this morning. And I'm so sick of people saying I'm spiritual but not
honestly,
religious.
God save us from spiritual people. I cannot stand them.
But I'm almost like half kidding because there's something I genuinely love about the ritual of Catholicism that it's like I kind of stink at the personal relationship stuff, but I love the ritual, man. Like there's something so awesome about the processions and the cult behind what we do, you know.
Lofton really would make a good co-host.
Oh, 1,000%. I can't wait till the day he's on as a Catholic consultation for the mainstream.
All right, let's see, because there's still something that she gets to that's
others and as a weapon to beat people down, you're also not walking with Jesus. So I would really encourage him to find the best parts of faith and not diverge into extremist beliefs.
If your faith isn't extreme, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. The lukewarm will be vomited out of Christ's mouth.
Bro, The View is known for their theological precision.
That's true.
Whoopi Goldberg was a nun, people.
Exactly. They are the theological commentators of our day.
If this is his belief system, if there are many Catholics who are staunch this way and don't
actually
just
a small,
saying,
small just, percentage listen, going I'm to the Latin Mass.
I'm just telling you, there are many people.
Where do you think she's getting her like who's feeding her? She doesn't
small percentage of
you
the
know.
Latin
so who's
Mass.
Feeding her that? It's got to be a Catholic.
But Rob, this has been the talking point for a very long time, right? It's only 1% of Catholics. They're a very small group.
Yeah, but 20% of the actual Catholics that go to Mass.
Exactly. Exactly.
But they're becoming a major thorn in their side because this stuff keeps coming up and they keep saying they're 1%, they're just a small minority, but that minority keeps getting louder and louder. And think about how many times a small minority was able to overthrow
every single system.
Time.
It's always a minority.
It's always a small minority of rebels who are able to overthrow an entire
system. Like, exactly. It's like, I don't know if you guys know the whole 3% movement. Mm-hmm. Nick probably does. Mm-hmm. But it's this whole, you know, American conservative thing where it was 3% of people who fought in the revolution. So yeah. You only need 3% of people to rise up. So and there is truth.
I don't like how you just like subtly said, oh, Nick probably knows, but Anthony.
Hey, no, that's fine.
Did you know what I was talking about?
No, I actually do, because I think like a plurality of people just held no position on it, right? Like yeah. Most people were just indifferent to it, just wanted no part in it whatsoever. And it was really a small percentage that fought.
Basically, like 3% fought for the British, 3% fought for the Continental yeah. Army, and the rest were kind of just in the middle.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's keep hammering down on this. Yeah, it's always a small minority. Mm-hmm. A small minority. Mm-hmm. That's why they're so. Why do you think the hammering down on Tradiciones Custodes? Because they know this movement. But the thing is, when you suppress it, it actually gets bigger. That's mm-hmm. the irony of it.
Mm-hmm.
Who believe this way. And I'm simply saying, rather than write a petition to get him fired, because
don't
this
get
is,
him fired.
Well, yes. that's what I'm talking
Pope
about.
Discourages it, just so you know, in the Catholic Church, the Pope diverges from this belief.
It does.
Right there is the icing on the cake, because oddly, Francis gives credence to this point of view, right? Like it gets like a seal of approval on what she's saying because of Tradiciones Custodes, because of the crackdown on the Latin Mass, because there is so much noise against this movement. And it's not just the Mass, man. It's this shift towards people really saying, I'm done with modernity. People are just mm-hmm. done with it. Yeah, well, Mike Lewis supported this woman's nonsense on Twitter. Yeah, that's what made me want to talk about it tonight, because Mike Lewis, a Catholic, was agreeing with her because he hates traditionalists so much that he's siding with the evangelical instead of actually like what happened in the Butker speech. I don't get what the mayhem is being caused over this Butker speech.
Everyone type Mike Lewis 3 times into the chat and watch.
And he will appear.
He will appear. I think the thing is it's this reality. Satan rages against the Most High because he knows he's defeated. Like, for instance, there's a whole discussion in church fathers where they're like, did Satan know that Christ was the Son of God? You know what I'm saying? Like they like when Christ was veiled in the flesh, they're like, what did they actually know that he was the Son of God? And when Christ died on the cross, Satan knew he was done. He was messed up. He's toast, right? And since that time, especially, he's been raging against the Most High. So whether it's, you know, the French Revolution, whether it's 1917 communism, whether it's the suppression of the TLM, et cetera, he's going to try whatever he wants. Feminism is the female liberalism, right? Mm-hmm. It's female application of secular liberalism, which is nothing more than practical Satanism, according to the traditional teaching of the Catholic Church. Scripture is extremely clear on this subject, that wives, right, should be obedient to their husbands, keepers at home, et cetera, et cetera. Does that mean that women can't work in the home, right, that they can't be, you know, entrepreneurial in that more like domestic sense? No, of course not, right? But it does mean that this 1960s project is satanic.
Yeah, and it's failing. It's failing.
Yeah, no one's happy.
The Enlightenment is failing. All of it is failing. You're seeing it all collapse in front of us. So, Rob, let's bring up that story that goes with this. So the religious battle behind the Butker speech, this is from New Republic.
New Republic one, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so the rise of trad Catholicism is sowing discord at religious institutions, including Benedictine College, where NFL kicker made his controversial remarks. With pro-Palestinian demonstrators roiling campuses across the country, few could have predicted that the most controversial commencement speech of the season would occur at Benedictine College, a small liberal arts college in Northeast Kansas, courtesy of a 28-year-old NFL player. But Harrison Butker's speech on May 11 seemed lab-engineered to generate outrage. The Kansas City Chiefs kicker referred to Pride Month as one of the deadly sins, declared that
it is.
Amen.
Well, right, let me ask you this. Do you think he had any idea he would cause this much of an uproar?
Probably. I mean, the guy is a smart dude, especially if he's given something like a commencement speech. right? He's probably a smart dude coming from like a private school, right? So he has to be smart. If he wasn't, like if he didn't think he was going to get any backlash, I'd be like, my guy, come on. You put like small, one minor thing out. Like if you were to just tweet out on your Twitter, I love Donald Trump. That alone is already going to get a fair amount of hate, right?
Yeah, as an NFL kicker who just won the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
I don't think he expected it to be like
maybe not that bad.
Full national outrage. You know what
full
I mean?
National outrage. Giving a speech at a Catholic. I think he probably thought it would cause a little bit of a stir. I don't think he ever had any idea. So it's like this thing seems like it was lab engineered to generate outrage. You want to know who else gave a commencement speech a week ago? Jonathan Rumi. Did anybody hear about it?
No.
Nobody even heard about it, right?
Where did he give
probably
it?
Probably wasn't even Catholic.
I think it was at Christendom College. Jerry Seinfeld gave a commencement speech recently. He got a little bit of press on it. Nothing like this though. I mean, this is unreal how much. So, it almost seemed lab engineered to generate outrage. The Kansas City Chiefs kicker referred to Pride Month as one of the deadly sins, declared that things like abortion, IVF, surrogacy, euthanasia, as well as a growing support for degenerate cultural values and media all stem from the pervasiveness of disorder, implored men to be unapologetic in their masculinity, and addressing the graduating women specifically said, I would venture to guess the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world.
God forbid. You
have the audacity.
I mean, you could have said that about the men too, and most of them would probably have agreed too. You know what I mean? That's not even necessarily like anti-feminist. It's just
wait a minute.
I didn't even like his whole. I have pretty essentially his entire like whole discussion on women memorized. It was basically two points. It was one. There's a fair amount of you guys who are going to go out and probably pursue jobs and careers, right? And you're excited for that. And then there's the majority of you who are probably excited about getting married, having children, etc. Right. That was his first one. And then his second one was basically to support the first one by using his wife as an example. He never went on stage and was just like, hey, women should never work, right? No. If women do work, that's a terrible society. He never got up and said any of that. Just the fact, though, that he mentions marriage and children and that you'll be happy about that to a degenerate, porn-watching, pride-obsessed, baby-killing culture, that's too much, right? That's too much.
And the thing is, the way they think these people – so, Rob, I just sent you another video. Let's play this video. This is a woman giving – the Harrison Butker speech to men. So, and let's just see how it plays and let's just see how men react, because it's the complete opposite of what he did in that it's being given to men. So let's just see how you react hearing a woman say this.
You naive young men have had the most diabolical lies told to you by men's rights activists, filling your tiny brains with silly ideas like you should have ambition for your career, when I would venture to guess that most of you are excited about your marriages and the beautiful children you're going to have. And I'm an expert because I am married to a man whose life began when he became the father to my two children, Colleen Jr. and Colleen II. And I am
that's where she loses us, right?
He married me, a multimillionaire.
And now that's the other thing, right? So she had to throw those two things in, Colleen Jr. and Colleen II, and married me, a multimillionaire. First off, ladies, if you're a millionaire, men don't care. Like your career, we don't care. We're not impressed by your job. Like, I don't care if you're a physicist. I don't care about any of that. None of that matters to us. It's just not that important to us. In fact, it might actually discourage men from approaching you. She's intentionally condescending. But if she had actually said that seriously and said, my husband's life,
the condescending tone is the only bad part.
That's it. Harrison Butker was not condescending at all. He was actually, the guy was choking up on the verge of tears as he spoke about his wife, the girl who he met in band class, who converted to the faith, and he choked up as he said that, right? And it's so strange because I'm listening to him describing my situation, right? Like a girl in middle school I met who converted to the faith, and I completely am just like bonding with this man who I have no idea who he is or anything, but just this.
Oh gosh, you're gonna start bugging him for an interview, aren't you?
Oh, dude, I'm trying to get. We got to mix it up a little bit. But I'll tell you right now, like, Taylor knows him. Hell yeah, he's gonna cry. 100%. That's what I thought the joke you were going for. Taylor knows him. Tim Gordon knows him. He's not doing interviews with those guys. There's no chance. But the, you know, just listening to him, it gave me like the sense of fraternity with him. Just like, oh man, I know exactly how you feel, because I choked up when I gave my talk in Chicago last year when I spoke about my son. I know that feeling.
Oh, Jared, I thought you were going to talk about the Geico commercial again.
No. But when you're a dad and you're a husband and you talk about your family, there's nothing that's going to choke you up more than that.
Oh, next week, like immediately. Mysteries.
Notice though how she, like, since she's condescending in that video, how she essentially, the subliminal message is that in reality, guys, your children should be second in your life, yeah, after your career, which is such a just like dehumanizing, disgusting thing to say. I mean, you should love your career ideally and work hard at your career, but why? It's so that you can take care of your children, or yeah, that if you're not married, so that one day you can do that. It's wild.
Yeah, there's very few careers that are self-serving, like actually self-serving, like to where there is a purpose in them in and of themselves, at least today.
Because the only thing that brings purpose is self-sacrifice, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the strangest twisting of the way reality works, the way God made it. It's that if you do something selfish, you'll feel good in the moment, but it leaves nothing lasting, right? So the mm-hmm. only time you actually have anything fulfill you is when you lay down your life for someone else. It's like he meant what he said, and he said what he meant when he said, those who lay down their lives will gain it, and those who gain that, you know, like that's what Jesus meant. If you lay down those who lose their life will gain it, and those who gain their lives will lose it. It's such a strange, like, twisting of the way the world where everything's upside down when you become Christian, man. So yeah, there's not many careers that actually give you that feeling of purpose and sense of purpose. So when I talk to my kids, especially my son, it's like, look, let's try to help you find a career, and we use that word lightly, because your career is just the way you provide for your family. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you do. Like, I'm not my vocation isn't road builder, you know.
I don't know if I told this story on here already. It was maybe 2 months ago. I'm driving alone with Maddie, and he's in the seat right next to me. And I forget how it came up, but I asked him if he wanted to be a dad when he grew up. And he goes, yeah, I think so. I'm like, well, why do you think you want to do that? He goes, how did he word it? It was like, because what's the point otherwise?
Brilliant kid.
High five.
Very perceptive.
Gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Very perceptive. It's because, yeah, what is the point otherwise? Unless you're going to be a priest. But even if you're a priest, you're a mm-hmm. father. Even if, right?
Yep, I said, Maddie, you're exactly right. Unless you wanted to be a priest like Father Charlie. And he goes, who's our local priest. And he goes, is that because Father Charlie's like a dad to all of us? I'm like, yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's exactly mm-hmm. what it is. So like the whole way everything, the whole idea of the church is given to us as spiritual fatherhood, and all fatherhood on heaven and earth is named after God the Father. It's why mm-hmm. we call priests father, right? Now, Kale's a teacher, right? So I do think in Kale's situation, there's something rewarding about helping people, right? Like if your career is maybe nursing, or if you're a doctor, or you know, and you're doing things to help save people, there is something rewarding in that, right? You're mm-hmm. you're seeing, you're giving something of yourself to see somebody advance. Whereas my job is filling in holes for a living. Rob's job is accounting. It's this, my job is nothing to me. It's just how I provide for my family. My life is when I come home and I spend time with them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like so much of that, though, it's like you can be a teacher, you can be a nurse, you can be a firefighter. It's at least still for other people. You know what I'm saying? Whereas yeah. the way that she's looking at this whole worldview of career over children is that my career is what is going to make me happy in this yeah. life. And that's the fulfillment, which is just such a lie.
So, all right, so the rest of the article. While plenty of people who were not at the graduation ceremony and likely had never heard of Benedictine College before this news were angered by his speech, it would appear that most of his actual audience was nothing short of delighted, judging from the standing ovation he received at the end. That's not surprising to religious scholars like me who had heard of
Benedictine. This person's a religious scholar?
Apparently. This conservative Catholic school of just 2,200 students is actually a microcosm of a major trend in American religion. Like many other Catholic institutions, it has been taken over by one of the fastest growing religious movements in the country, trad Catholicism. I love this. Mm-hmm. And not without strife. The Sisters of Mount St. Scholastica, an order of nuns who founded Benedictine College, last week released a statement condemning Butker's speech. These are the nuns who are dressing up as priests trying to mock the holy sacrifice of the mass.
When they're not wearing their pantsuits, that is.
When they're not wearing pantsuits. Like, anytime you see religious sisters wearing pantsuits, it's amazing.
In the most horrible way possible.
Order of Hillary Clinton.
It does not represent Catholic Benedictine Liberal Arts College that our founders envisioned and which we have been so invested. This disparity between
Which, for the record, they're actually no longer invested. They have nothing to do with the college anymore.
Nothing to do with it.
So yeah. Who cares what they say?
The disparity between the applause on the ground and the rebuke from the nuns speak to tensions within American Catholicism that can be found even in Butker's speech. He criticized Biden as a man who publicly and proudly proclaims his Catholic faith while pushing dangerous gender ideologies onto the youth of America. He also went after Catholic Church leaders who adhered to pandemic restrictions, noting the chaos in our parishes and sadly in our cathedrals too, which is a shot at Dolan. That's a shot at Dolan, who he spoke to, and Dolan twisted what he said publicly. Right? So Butker called Cardinal Dolan, and Cardinal Dolan on his Sirius XM radio show the next day said, well, I spoke to Harrison Butker and he was very happy about us reconsecrating the cathedral, which they never actually did. They just said a mass. Like, they never did any kind of act of reparation there. Meanwhile, he claimed that people young and old are embracing tradition and launched into an extended discussion of the traditional mass. TLM, as is known among its fans, is a Roman Catholic liturgy celebrated in Latin according to the Roman Missal of 62, characterized by its solemn rituals, Gregorian chant, and the priest facing ad orientem, that is, toward the altar. No, it's not. It's toward the east. The celebration of this mass, untouched by the liturgical reforms of the Second Vatican Council, has become a major symbol of traditionalist Catholic identity. So-called trad Catholics, It is the liturgical manifestation of a theological, cultural, and ideological position that is fundamentally about the rejection of modernity, right? And especially about disdain for anything that could be understood as an embrace of that modernity by the Catholic Church. This is very perceptive, at least, right? Like, any embrace of that modernity, we're just done with. Mm. Bro, even the Francis interview, right? I cannot believe how much, what would you call it? How much, like, equity Francis got out of this whole not living in the papal apartments thing. It's like every interview with Francis is prefaced with this: Francis, who doesn't live in the lavish papal apartments and instead chose the meager apartments of Sancta Marta,
drives around in a little Fiat instead of
the next Pope, if he dares put on red shoes and move back into the papal apartments,
I hope the next Pope pulls a whole young Pope from HBO sort of thing.
That's
Don the tiara, you know, all
but
of it.
Rob, what is that? What is that actually doing? That is bringing the kingdom to earth. Mm-hmm. Like, people just don't grant. It's like, oh, you're this Pope in Rome with his gold and his yes, you're bringing the kingdom to earth. It is the visible kingdom on earth. We want the pomp and circumstance. We want the most outrageous display.
We're literally made for it.
Of royalty. Mm-hmm. It's 100%. That is what we're made for. It's like, we are participating in this story and we are royalty ourselves. So the church having these riches, we are children of God. Those are our riches. It's just, these people just can't comprehend at all what we're aiming for in the church. And it's so much because of the church itself not understanding itself anymore. It's like, I heard It was Dave Smith on with Tucker Carlson, and they were talking about how World War II is the creation story for the modern world, but it's also the creation story for the council. Like all those men that went into the council with this burden on them, right? And it affected everything. And it is the birth of the post-conciliar church is in the shadow of that war. And everything has been affected by it in modernity, in the church, in every facet of life that we can possibly imagine.
Oh, 1,000%. And that's one thing I was going to point out. I have a video releasing tomorrow. It's called something to the effect of like why there's no such thing as conservative Catholics and liberal Catholics. And my whole point behind the video is this reality is that since the time of the council fathers, the declarations that came forward, the reforms that came forth, all had the mindset of we need to dialogue with the world and be friends with the world. So much so that when you watch priests' interviews, etc., especially the ones who are old enough to still be alive, right, from pre-council, they were like, before the council, we called Protestants and the Orthodox the adversaries of the faith. Now we call them brothers and sisters in Christ. But that thought pattern carries over to secular modernity. Let's dialogue with secular modernity. It's failed royally, but it's arisen so clearly here where you think on the one hand, there's conservative Catholicism, and yeah, you know, maybe they like some aesthetics and stuff, and they hold on to some doctrines and stuff. But then, like, you have the sisters group over here and Joe Biden. There's liberal Catholicism. James Martin works for the Vatican, right? So there's this liberal Catholicism, and it's all fine. If you have a church in which there are conservatives and liberals, and it just depends on which pope you get, right? Almost like every election, whatever president you get the direction for the church. Then you live in a dogmaless church. Yeah. That's why we need to pray and hope more than ever that Christ gives us a truly Catholic Pope who says, okay, we have a deposit of faith. We need to go preach the gospel.
Yeah, this is it really, this whole conversation, man, it's wild how all of this is coming to a head right now. All right, so let's just see what the rest of this says. Over the past two decades, Benedictine College has become a center of the tri-Catholic movement. Earlier in the month before Bucker's speech, Benedictine featured prominently an Associated Press story. Oh, that was from them.
Oh, yeah.
That I didn't realize. Okay, a story on the rise of traditionalists in Catholicism. At Benedictine reported, Tim Sullivan, Catholic teaching on contraception can slip into lessons on Plato, and no one is surprised if you volunteer for 3 a.m. prayers. Pornography, premarital sex, and sunbathing in swimsuits are forbidden. But it was not always this way. All right, so I don't really care about the rest of it. Yeah, it's just this whole, that was the bulk of it. But it's just this movement is gaining momentum, and it scares the ever living crap out of these people. And I think it's apt that the FBI was investigating us because they do see something here. And I really do think this minority is going to be the revolution that turns the tide.
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, every single time that something arises like this, it gives us more publicity. And I'm sure there's a zillion like normie conservative men out there who like watch football, who are like, hey, this guy's speech was pretty cool. What is this Latin mass thing? And they check it out. Boom. Best evangelization
that we've
done in the last 60 years is a football player being like, yeah, TLM is pretty good. Or an actor being like, yeah, the TLM speaks to me, Bishop Barron. I'm going to go here.
Makes sense. Crazy, right? All these things. It's so wild how all these things are happening, man. And they're all happening under Francis. It's the funniest thing. He's the greatest evangelist for traditional Catholicism imaginable.
Yeah, Sam brings a good point. He says, look at the charts this year. I don't know. Did you guys see the charts?
I saw some of the images. Yeah. Is it one of their biggest they've had?
Like, yeah. I mean, literally tens of thousands of people out there. And so the Shards pilgrimage, it's technically two pilgrimages. The original was with the SSPX, and then there's an Ecclesia Dei group that basically does the other one. So combined, it's like literally tens of thousands. But you see that in France, it's all these young people and then pilgrims from around the world. I have friends who went this year. It's pilgrims all around the world just showing like how much of the youth in the faith is rising up.
So, Caleb, you're around Thursday and you want to jump on with me and Rob. Nick's not going to be around, and I'd love to get you back on and talk about hyper objects, maybe even talk about the council and talk about what the trad movement looks like to the older generation, because Cale's a couple years older than me. I'd love to get his take on all of this stuff.
Hey, it would be really, be really old then.
Very funny, Nick. all right, so let's switch gears. Let's get into the Russell Brand conversation, man. This conversation was, yeah, Kale's a decade older than me. So that, which I mean, he was,
he had his anointing at his last rites.
He's he's a JP2 Catholic, man. Like, that's, you know, so I would love to get his perspective, because he was look, you gotta, a lot of the younger guys don't get it. Nick, you just came into the church. You don't get what a
bro. I have this thing called the internet and research.
I know, but Nick, you didn't live through it. You
I have know. No nostalgia. I have no emotional nostalgia for John Paul II after what I've seen. None at all.
So I asked a question today. I asked two questions. One was, who caused more damage to society, Martin Luther or Mustache Man? And people didn't understand the question. They thought who's
they
more
never
evil.
Do.
They never do. I'm saying, who did more damage to society, Luther or Mustache Man? And it's like, people can, and all the Catholics were like, Luther, 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 but all the Protestants went haywire, right? But then I asked the question, who's the most evil person in history? And wait, why did I? Wow, man. Oh, and Patty said John Paul II.
I wouldn't say the most evil.
Because there are people who could view it that way. I mean, those Assisi meetings is pretty ruthless, right?
Assisi's just touching, like that's the most visible. That's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you go into so many of his writings talking about Islam and about Protestantism, and I'm like, bro, if you were saying this stuff in the 30s, you would have been called in by a Roman congregation for examination.
So that's how you view John Paul II. All right, so that's all I'm saying.
I have no nostalgia None. For like, it's like people who have nostalgia for the Bush years. They're just like, oh, George Bush, we could just get a sound conservative back in.
You got to remember, like,
and I'm like, no,
we didn't have the internet.
Exactly.
So like, not all that stuff. We didn't know any of that stuff.
None of it. I didn't hear about Assisi until Taylor Marshall told me about it. I had no idea, dude. I was like, what is this? We have a Pope with Buddha statues up there? I had no idea. So now you have to, Nick, you don't get it. For a guy that's 51, like Kale, I'm 42. Coming up under John Paul II, we adored this man. The Protestants were losing their minds about him, and they're calling him the Antichrist. And we're like, the man's a living saint. Like, we wanted him sainted. We were like, we thought he was a living saint. Him and Mother Teresa together. Wish. Huh?
You got your wish.
Yeah, we got our wish. So, but this is the perception, right? And then after John Paul, we get Benedict, and we're just the emotional high we were on from those years, man. These Protestant converts are coming in the church. You got EWTN, The Journey Home. You got Scott Hunt. Like, you don't even know.
It just sounds like, though, like, again, just like emotional nostalgia for a better time.
That's what it is
for me. Because again, for me, it's just like, oh yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up with like Pastor Jim Bob, and like, we had our dispensationalism, and it was a small town America, and everything was just so hunky dory. And I thought that people got pregnant by just kissing, and that was my worldview, and that everything's great. But then you grow up, and you're like, well, this doesn't really fly, man. Doesn't make sense.
Oh, dude, it's such a different.
See, I'd love to talk to Kale, because that would be an interesting conversation. A Gen Z trad, and then
because I'm actually on more your side, Nick. I grew up in that era.
Well, you're a little younger than me, Rob. No. You don't even realize that 5-6 year difference makes a difference.
How old are you again, Rob? Are you 36?
Yeah, 35. Like, I had friends that went to the World Youth Day in Denver.
Yeah,
and all of that.
But how old were you though?
Well, I forget when was the World Youth Day.
In Denver, you gotta check on that, because dude, we were young. I was young.
Like, I know. I'm just saying. Like, I don't have any nostalgia for the man. Not anymore.
So I do, because that's when I watched my father convert. Like, you got, like, it's, that's my nostalgia, is my family and just listening to, you know, my mom and stuff. It's, I really do think it's an age thing though. Like, I think you were at the tail end of it. John Paul was already like really incapacitated by the time you were probably paying attention to that stuff. He was a vegetable at that point. He was barely able to speak.
I think it's the internet too. Like, to Rob's point, like, I think that the ignorance is bliss. And so when you have a Pope up there who's traveling around the world, right, he's promoting, you know, the rosary and this adoration.
I think his charismatic upbringing that blinds that.
Honestly, that's fair. That entire movement, you know, that like Kennedy Hall, he's going after like, you know, a crusade at the moment. He's doing a good job. That's another great example. It's like all of this that they openly admit comes from Pentecostalism. And then John Paul II's just like, long live the charismatics. And you're just sitting here thinking,
should we abandon the show topic and have Kale come on and talk to us about this?
We always do.
We'll just change the title and everything. Like, Kale, if you want to come on, I'm sending you the link. Hang on.
Hey, come on.
Let's get Kale on. I want to talk to him about this.
I'll talk.
I think my lack of nostalgia is more that, like, even though for myself, like, I was really strong in the faith at that point, like, I watched a lot of family leave the church. Yeah. You know, over that period. So I guess and then towards the end was the 2002 stuff, you know. Yeah. So
it's just also
I want to hear about his part. You know, like, I want to hear about that, where they didn't even know. Because do you remember the slight changes in the new mass, Rob, when Benedict made those changes, how awkward those were at first?
Well, so he did that in what, 2011?
I think it was around.
Yeah, this is awesome. So Benedict made those changes in like 2011.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
What's up, good
sir? Mr. Kale Zeldin?
Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right, because I got these stupid Apple things and I never know if they work or not. So
wait, Kale, you're saying when you were in elementary school, there was what year is this?
My school right now?
No. Like when you were in middle school.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. My things got glitchy. So I was born in 1973, right? So I was like, we'll call it what, 73? It would have been like 78. Like, I remember watching TV with my mom when Carol Wotilla's name was announced. And so in 70, that would have been 5 years old, right? So it's like one of my early like TV memories, you know, like with your mom. And I remember thinking the name was funny. I thought it sounded like a carrot to me. I remember anyway. but I remember like when I went to Catholic school, obviously, and the, you know, when we would do the, you know, like the school masses, you know, like when I was a second grader, I would go up with my like seventh grade big buddy and we would go like do the reading. And the missal was so new. So you're thinking like, this is like 1970, you know, 78. The missal is so new that the lector's job, you literally had to call out, okay, like, you know, stand, you know, sit. Yeah. It was so bizarre. And it was in like big, bold red letters because nobody knew what the heck was going on. It was like totally nuts. It was totally new. And so, you know, my mom, God, it's so funny. I don't even know where to start, like with all the stuff, but it's, by the time, you know, so what year were you born?
I was born in 82.
Okay, so Rob, you were born in 88. Okay, right. So in 88, I'm in eighth grade. Okay. And like at that point, you know, John Paul II had pissed off all the liberation theologians and all that sort of stuff. And so, you know, so from the vantage point of more conservative-ish, because there were no trads, right? I mean, the trads were so marginalized. I mean, there's just nothing like it, right? So, but the conservative-minded folks were basically looking at JP2 as like super based. Like, you know, he was shutting down the liberation theologians. He was talking about the communists. He was sort of teaming up with Reagan and Thatcher. And like, so, you know, he got a lot of credibility for that. So like when weird things like, you know, what is the thing that the trads always, like Assisi and all this kind of stuff, it was just sort of like weird background noise because people basically were like, look, this guy is fighting many, many big fights and he's slaying fools. And so I think he got a lot of pass on that big, like all the stuff that you and I, all of us would have a problem with in retrospect now, for sure.
Do you remember hearing about Assisi when it happened, or did you learn about it later, like us?
I don't remember it when it was happening. I was probably in college at the time. So, you know, does anybody have a year on that Assisi thing?
Yeah, 86.
Yeah, so like that was way before. My gosh, like I was in college in 92, 93, 94, and 95, right? So. Yeah, like that was before I was conscious. You know, that was like that's 6th, 7th grade for me, you know. So
anyway, were you taking your faith seriously in college?
Yeah, so like my trajectory is, you know, because I went to Catholic schools, I lost my faith. So no, like really. I mean, you know, it was like classic, right? And Rob, to your point, I heard you say right as I was going on, you sat and watched all your family and all your mm-hmm. friends lose their faith. Like that was a major deal for me. So I was like a fairly precocious snot. And so I like kind of told my mom, like, I'm not Catholic anymore. And I sort of became a kind of course, you know, the sort of the social justice warrior type thing. And I left the church, et cetera. And then I go to LSU my freshman year. I'm from Louisiana. And I went into this like honors college, which was basically like a kind of great books program. So I didn't have to take composition and, you know, I could just do all my gen ed requirements to this honors. And so I started reading, you know, my first, you know, I read, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey. But then we read, you know, a lot of Plato and a lot of Aristotle. And then the next term, we read Augustine's Confessions and, you know, reading this sort of stuff. And I quickly realized that what I thought I had abandoned was a joke, right? So that Chesterton quote was always pretty resonant with me that, you know, nobody, you know, leaves if they really know, you know, that sort of thing. So then that's when I made my sort of movement back. Why was I talking about this?
Well, first off, Joe Boca's in the chat, and Joe Boca had the same thing. He left the faith and then read Plato,
yeah.
And he comes back to the faith through reading Plato. Yeah. Well, we were just trying to get an idea of when you started taking your faith seriously. Stuff gets on your radar, like when you start paying attention to this stuff.
Yeah, so in the fall of 1991 and in the spring of 92, I kind of read myself back into the church, right? I didn't really know what that meant, you know, but so then at that point, I applied to go to University of Dallas and Thomas More College up in New Hampshire. I wound up going to Thomas More, New Hampshire because they had Rome programs, because I knew that if I was going to be Catholic, I really wanted to go to the mothership. I really wanted to spend some time. And so I did. I kind of made my way there. And so then I became pretty intensely aware of that stuff, you know, read the old Crisis magazines and, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
You see the converts coming in the church too during this time, right?
Right. Cause then it was like, oh, like, well, smart people. And I like, you know, cause I was an arrogant kid. It's like, well, smart people are Catholic. So like, that's what I had realized. You sort of, oh, and then there's a real truth to that. But I would say like a couple of my evangelical friends were really helpful for me because they took Jesus very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some couple of crucial moments, like one of my best friend was an evangelical at the time. And he like saved me a couple of times. He was just like, you know, he was just like, Cale, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I get frustrated with X, Y, and Z, but there's just something so compelling about this figure of Christ in the gospels. And so, you know, you have to kind of take those things seriously. And then you realize you're not as smart as you think you are.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you read like 15 pages of Plato or 20 pages of Aristotle. And you're like, okay, like, well, these dudes are smart. You know, Shakespeare's smart. Dante's smart. You know, Augustine's smart. And, you know, you just sort of go through that list. And so then I started taking sort of Catholic stuff, like, you know, churchy stuff pretty seriously.
So now do you remember feeling like an excitement under John Paul II, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, again, you know, the 70s were a pretty depressed time, right? You know, in this country and in the scene. I mean, like, you know, people really thought that the commies were going to win.
Yeah.
Like, no joke. Like, it's really easy to sort of look at the Iron Curtain thing as like, oh, well, it was always doomed to fail. And, you know, but man, when you were in the middle of it, you know, like you really thought that at any moment the commies were going to drop a bomb, and you really thought that the commies were going to take over Europe and, you know, swipe to the east. And I mean, so like that was a real thing. And again, I'm a kid, but, you know, that was definitely the vibe that we all imbibe. So again, you see somebody like John Paul II, like just thumbing his middle finger at the commies, right?
Yeah, plot twist, yeah, Kale. The commies actually did win.
You get, again, I'm trying to get us into the mindset of this.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm looking for.
John Paul II was like, man, he's the man. And he would come and like everybody wanted to go see him. I remember going to the Superdome and seeing him, and he was inspiring. And he like spoke to us, and you know, and he was like, he was just an inspiring guy. And it was like a thing.
World leaders would tremble in front of John Paul II. This is before the church scandals, guys. Yeah. Like the Catholic Church still holds a moral authority in the world before the scandals in 02 come out. Like people, Nick, you're in such a small segment of your Catholic life that so you witnessed this excitement under John Paul II. Then the church scandals come, but we defended the church under all that stuff. No, it's not all priests. It's not all priests. We defended that nonsense. And then Benedict came and we had a little more excitement. What was it like? When did your heart break under Francis?
So my heart broke under Francis. I mean, he gave me the willies. You know, you remember Steve used to say that, Skojek used to say that, like he saw him on the Palazzo thing.
On the loggia.
The loggia gave me the willies. But like, I was like, come on, you know, like, let's go. Like, this is the real deal. I mean, I think in retrospect, I remember the first encyclical he came out with was basically kind of, he finished up a Benedict encyclical, if memory serves.
Yeah, he did.
And then the second one was that Laudato Si, maybe?
No. So it was, oh man.
Was that,
I remember Laudato Si, like, you know, like, okay, like, I get it. Like, you know, let's not trash the environment. I thought it was like, whatever, but I wasn't really, I was like, fine. I was still kind of like staying on the team type.
So Lumen Fidei was the light of faith.
Lumen Fidei was the light of faith with Benedict.
And then it was Laudato Si. Then Evangelii Gaudium.
Yeah. Laudato Si, I remember thinking like, man, he just doesn't really like Americans. Like that was like my vibe that I got with that, but like, fine, like whatever. I'm not going to lose my sleep over that. But I mean, honestly, for me, the Synod on the Family, I'm like, you know, I'm like, what the heck? And then when he trashed the JP2 Institute, which I had a deep affection for, I'm like, that's really, but then honestly, you know, McCarrick destroyed me.
Yeah.
McCarrick really destroyed me. And like, I remember like those are those days when Tim and Taylor were doing their show, and like I was like listening to every episode, because like finally some guys around my age are saying true things, right, about like the absurdity. And that was really, I remember there was a funny episode that they did, and I'll always thank them for these episodes, but like they did like on buzzwords. It was a couple of those buzzwords.
Oh man, that was hilarious.
I'm cutting the grass in my lawn. And I'm just like howling, laughing.
Yeah, those TNT shows are funny.
They were so good. They were really great. And so the McCarrick thing really blew me up. And then I'm like, well, I don't even know what's going on anymore. Because
it wasn't just McCarrick, though. It was McCarrick and then the Sex Summit. And
that's right.
And I was hopeful that the Sex Summit, these guys were going to wear sackcloth and ash and beg God's mercy for what they had done. Yeah. And instead they were like, well, male adult relationships that are consensual are not abuse. And I'm like, we're done. That's it. Yeah. God's wrath is upon us. We're done.
I did kind of barge in here, but I just like, I say one thing about JP2, you know, it's like, he does come around in a very curious time in which the intellectual firmament of Catholicism was really challenged, you know, and like for instance, you can do a whole reading on where Peter is, you know, that whole crowd. You can do a whole reading, which they're basically they're footnoting in a negative way Veritatis Splendor. Like they hate that encyclical, right? The idea that there are intrinsically immoral things like that is just, and look, you know, John Paul II rebuilt or reasserted is probably a better way to say it, things that the four of us probably all agree with, like entirely, you know, that, and it really is, you know, prior to that, you know, it was up for grabs. I mean, it really was kind of a weird kind of 70s time where, you know, well, what else are they going to change, right? And we all know this because we all, you know, we like traditional liturgies and whatnot. You know, all of that stuff was up for grabs. And so I do admit that I give him a pass because what he did intellectually and inspirationally. Now, I think, you know, I think his handling of the abuse crisis was abominable. I think, you know, and maybe I give him too much of a pass on that for nostalgic reasons. But I give him credit for those things. And but my you know, my eyes are wide open. I'm not one of these guys that even with saints, I mean, saints are not perfect people. And I do think that this is kind of like a warning to people about like, hey, maybe we shouldn't, you know, rush to canonize everything that moves.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, when the last 1,000 years of the church canonizes five popes, and then we canonize essentially every single one post for political reasons.
Actually, Nick, to that point, a thing that broke me and it continues to break me is like I cannot bring myself to say Saint Paul the Sixth. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Or even Saint John the 23rd.
It's fucking bullshit.
It's so Kelly, are you busy Thursday?
I can come on, I'm sure. Is it around this time?
Yeah, it's about 8 p.m. I'll check with you. We'll text each other and we'll see. Because I'd love to get you like with a proper setup and be able to actually chew your ear off.
Y'all are gonna laugh right now. I'm actually on duty. I work at a boarding school. I'm on duty right now. So all the girls in the dorm are like, what the hell's going on with them over there?
Yeah, you're a good man. Guys, go subscribe to Cale Zeldin's YouTube channel. He has some really great conversations on there. He's one of my favorite people to watch. He's got such really good insights on everything going on. And he's a guy from this era that I, you know, I always feel a kinship with you, Kale, man. I love listening to you.
Yeah. All right, guys. Y'all be well. I'll see y'all later.
Thanks, brother. See you, Kale. I'll talk to you soon. Adios. That was a fun little pop-in from Kale.
That was.
Yeah. I can't say I'm necessarily convinced, because again, it just sounds to me mostly like nostalgia.
It is. It's nostalgia, Nick.
Because to me, I'd say, well, you know, great that he's like fighting against the commies, but like Joe Boca wisely said, like all of our horrible bishops at the moment were mostly appointed by John Paul II. Yep. Right. And it's easily proven that the head appointed by John Paul II to make bishops, right, was an open Freemason, right? This well-known established knowledge. Plus all of his statements when it comes to ecumenism, I'm like, bro, John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Do you get that vibe when you're up there holding hands with every other religion?
Well, Nick, I think that's why guys, I think it's going to take that generation who does still have this love and nostalgia for John Paul II to go away, to have clear glasses without the you know, I love them so much. It's almost like talking bad about, you know, your father when he passed. That's exactly what it is. You're talking bad about your deceased father, you know? Yeah. So it's going to take your generation to JP2 nostalgia is substantive as post 9/11 unity. Yeah. 100% post 9/11 unity after 9/11. If you guys had any idea what it was like to live in New York after 9/11, but it's just nostalgia. It's just sentiment. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Sentimentality.
I think it's going to take a generation, but then also like real internal discussion amongst the academic heads in the church. Because as an example, I've gone to DC twice, and in DC there's the John Paul II Shrine. And when I went on tour there, one of the biggest things that they have on like the introductory wall is this massive video talking about how amazing Assisi is and how just epic ecumenism is. And I'm like, this isn't a shrine. By the way, literally like 100 feet down the room, if you will, down the corridor, is Rupnik's art all over the place, right? And so, you know, now in hindsight, going back, if I was to walk in there, I'd be like, wow, this is really awkward. You got Assisi over here and Rupnik over here. What a great place.
That's when Nick gets arrested for public urination all
over. Well, this is what Kale was talking about, right? So when Veritatis Splendor came out, you guys don't, it's the same thing. Nick, you have the same freaking sentimentality for Trump.
Oh no, because I can point out, I can be like, look, Trump is cringe when it comes to abortion, although politically it's smart. He's cringe when it comes to bump stocks. But see, here's the thing, like at least Trump will get up there and say, these are our enemies, let's go bomb the crap out of them. Whereas listen John Paul II can't say, these are the adversaries of the faith, we need to go and evangelize.
I'm gonna tell you, listen to me. A lot of us love Trump because all the right people hate him.
Oh, that's true. There's truth to that. Yeah, yeah.
100%. Right? So under John Paul II, it seemed like all the right people hated him. I'm telling you, you don't know what it was like being around during that time. So, all right, listen, we're going to probably talk about something along these lines with Kale on Thursday, if he can make it. I want to get into the Russell Brand stuff, but we should do it over on Locals. We're going to have to switch the thumbnails and titles. Yeah.
I have the Locals thing set up. Let me just get the link here for everyone.
Yeah, guys, we're about to get into a very... The thing is, this conversation, you have Brett Weinstein is trying to pivot and make it like, well, look, I'm going to take Christianity into account. I'm not going to do what the New Atheists did. I'm going to say all the good things about Christianity. Because you see the New Atheists, even, what's his name, Dawkins or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Dawkins and Hitchinson and all them.
These guys are all coming out and being like, well, you know, I'm still a cultural Christian, right? So I think Brett Weinstein's trying to take that into account and say, well, maybe there's a place that we could compartmentalize this because there is a benefit to it. And maybe humanity evolved to incorporate some of these things. And it, what Russell Brand does is just, it's pretty good, man. For a new Christian and a guy, he's a very smart guy, Russell Brand. He really is. He's reading a lot of C.S. Lewis. So he gets a lot of the arguments of, like natural law as C.S. Mm-hmm. Lewis meant it, natural law as in the natural moral law, mm-hmm. right? Like, so he understands a lot of that philosophy, like the C.S. Lewis philosophy, and he's reading Aquinas. He has a lot of good things to say. So I'd like to break down the conversation, see what Nick says. I think we can expand on some of it. And I think a lot of us need these arguments for the new way people are speaking.
The new atheism that's cheery and rosy. And
or the new evangelization even. new evangelization. Because I really do think the Catholic Answers arguments are getting stale. And I don't think people are coming into the church the same way they did in the 90s and 2000s. I think people are coming in through guys like Russell Brand and Jordan Peterson. And the reason why is because these guys are saying something different, a little interesting and slightly off. Right. So we got to point out the things where they're off. Like, Jordan Peterson is off on some things. The guy has a little bit of Gnosticism mixed in with his Christianity and stuff. So I think it's important that we break down some of the things they get wrong as well. So can I say that I enjoy how frank this conversation is, and it doesn't feel like we have some Vatican commissary ready to denounce everybody. I'm so tired of the e-Catholic weird code. Listen,
I wonder who he's talking about. That's funny.
I just think a lot of the Catholic commentariat is this is their career.
Yeah, it's for views. So
it's for views. It's strictly for views, where I really do think we do this because we enjoy it. Like, it's fun sitting and hanging with our friends and just shooting the breeze with each other. So we try to be funny. We try to be as relatable as possible. I mean, I'm just me. I don't know. You guys like me or you hate me. I don't know what to tell you.
Two of the three of us just wear t-shirts.
When you guys watch the show, you guys know that essentially, like, any topic is open except for co-sleeping, and so
that's it.
We're done with that one.
Cut the show.
We're laying that one to bed. All right, so we're gonna jump over to Locals. I got like four or five clips set up. You want to play the short one, Rob, just to tease everybody? I sent one that's 1 minute long. Can you see how long they are in there?
Yes.
It's like a minute and 27 seconds, the one that hold I think on. You should play just to tease it.
There's one that's a minute 35.
Go with that one. Let's just see. Let's just tease it and just so you guys can see what we're going to go talk about.
But the materialists are the arrogance of the materialists is insufferable. Right. And so the point is, everything you're saying resonates perfectly fine for me. It's not, I'm not even arguing that it's, if the universe is entirely, in principle at least, explainable in materialist terms, I'm not arguing that that's a better way to go through life.
But why would it be? I mean, of course it would be.
Yeah.
Because of course, it would be. But of course it would be in terms of, even if God is like a sort of a personal anthropomorphic God and shazammed us into being with a sort of a, like a pop goes the weasel, it would, in its implementation, pass through material reality. And like, if you are an atemporal and aspatial being, the fact that these things take place over time and have a cellular lineage, that doesn't defy it. That's just how it happened. How did Van Gogh render those paintings? How did Tchaikovsky write those symphonies? Just sort of going, he wrote it down on that page. Doesn't explain the mystery of what, how the fuck did you come up with that?
Well, I mean,
sorry, guys.
What is it that the beauty is? Why beauty?
Right.
No symmetry, Brett. Beauty.
Well played. But if I can maybe overinterpret what you've just said, you could. The quantity of mystery is effectively conserved, and you can drive it all the way to the initial moment, right? The universe that came into being and let all of this other material stuff happen.
So, all right. So that's what we're going to talk about. Russell is a drunk very Brit. Sharp, man. Like he sees what I mean, look, obviously we disagree with the evolution stuff, but Russell's just trying to say to him, like, oh man, we're gonna get into it. It's some really good stuff. So guys, come over to Local, support your favorite show.
Before we go there, I gotta send Nick the link in the private chat real quick.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, good guys, point. Support your favorite show. Come on, everybody comes here. We have an awesome time every time we do this.
If you don't, if you don't, you're clearly gay or an atheist.
I don't think anybody else is doing what we do. I think we have a very unique show here, and it's very difficult to do on a pauper salary, guys. Help us out.
Pauper salary.
Basically beggars here.
We little church mice begging for alms.
Oh, this Don. Don, we gave you a collision of worlds tonight, bro. You got to be kidding me. This is like the Marvel Cinematic Universe coming together for Don. You have no idea how much he loves Kale. If he would have missed this live, he would have been so mad. Don, you didn't catch the beginning of the show, I don't think. And I started the show differently just for you, bud.
I honestly never thought I would hear like that type of description of Paul the Sixth from a Communio guy. Like, that's going to be burned into my memory.
That's amazing. I love that people are getting red-pilled on all of it, though.
Oh, 1,000%.
So, all right, guys, we're going to hop over there. Please come join us, man. Maybe we'll give you guys a little teaser clip on YouTube or something. But thank you so much. We are worth the subscription. It's very easy with the Locals app. Just takes a minute, set it up. I'll tell you what. We'll give you guys this one for free.
Yeah.
We'll give you this one
for free. Because I screwed it up.
Just go join Locals. You won't have to pay for it. It's for free. Just go join our Locals. And then if we tease you with enough good stuff, maybe you guys will be kind enough to chip in $5 a month, the cost of a cup of coffee, and we will see you guys later.